This is episode 80 with Bill George.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Bill George. And Bill George is the former Medtronic CEO and the current senior fellow at the Harvard Business School, best-selling author of Authentic Leadership and the True North book series. Bill's latest book, Discover Your True North, is launching today, actually, on the 17th of August. Bill appears as a regular contributor to CNBC and sits on the boards of Goldman Sachs, Target, Novartis, and the Mayo Clinic. Is credited with having popularized the phrase authentic leadership to describe CEOs who are consistent and true to themselves as leaders. In fact, Bill here is known as the CEO Whisperer. So, welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Tayo. Glad to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on here. And I did a little intro about you, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to writing all these great books and basically how your career led you to here?
Well, I assure you, I didn't start out as a writer. I went to Georgia Tech Engineering School and then went to get an MBA because I thought I wanted to be, and I did want to be, in high-tech companies, industrial companies, and figured that was the best route to management, and had the privilege of doing well in several early jobs with Litton Industries and Honeywell, and eventually got to Medtronic's doorstep where I had the best 13 years of my professional career. And was lucky enough to be named CEO back in 1991 and put a 10-year limit on being CEO because I felt in those days CEOs were staying too long.
Right.
And any high-tech organization needs some leadership every decade, particularly with people that come from the outside like myself. So I held to that date right to the day, May 1st, 2001. And, when you're CEO, you're kind of all in. It's 24-7. So I hadn't even thought about what I'm going to do next. So I went on a kind of a working sabbatical, a wilderness experience in Switzerland to teach at a couple institutes to see if I could teach. And got involved and started doing some writing. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 12 years.
Yeah. It's been amazing since then, I see.
Yeah. So I've had the privilege of being at Harvard Business School now in my 12th year, and feel very fortunate to do this. And I'm very passionate about leadership, and I decided what really makes a difference in our society, our leaders at all levels, nonprofits, for profits. I would say government, although I'm discouraged about political leadership and don't know much about that. But I think what we need are real, genuine, authentic leaders, not people that are just figureheads or charisma imposters or work on style, with people who are real. And I think that's what people are looking for today, particularly millennials.
No, absolutely. I'm a millennial myself, and the media company I have, UID, the mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. And what we try to focus on is building the next set of global leaders, because we, like you said, we are the next set of leaders. And I'm always curious about tackling topics, especially particularly to global leadership. And, one of the things we say, it's communicating across cultures and thinking outside the box. So, I'm particularly excited to have you on here, Bill. But you have two catchphrases, authentic leadership and true north. And I was reading some of your book earlier. Thanks for sending that over. And I'm very curious if you could explain the concept behind that, because I know you have a series on the True North series, but I'm curious about how you came across, or how you discovered these terms and what they particularly mean to you.
I wrote my first book back in 2003, because honestly, Dale, I was turned off my own generation of leadership. You recall way back then we had the Enron, what I call the corporate crisis, Enron, WorldCom, and some 200 companies that had major accounting if you will, adjustments. You would call it fraud today, but we called them adjustments. Some of them in the billions of dollars. And I said, what happened to my generation of leaders? We're killing the goose that laid the golden egg. And I think it got to be the me generation. I'm pleased to see the millennials are moving to the we generation, but it got to be the me generation. So I said, you know, leadership is not about charisma. It's not about, you know, the qualities you have. It's about who you are as a human being. You know, it's not about having certain style or anything like that. There's no one ideal style. You have to be who you are. I love your phrase about differences. That's what makes you unique. Each right. person, I'm unique, you're unique. Each person is unique, and we carry that through in our leadership because people know who's authentic and who's not. You can tell, you could tell a phony in the first 60 seconds you meet him. And why do you want to deal with phonies? You want to deal with the real person. Okay, I did some things wrong in my life. I made some mistakes. You know, I have some weaknesses. Of course you do. You all do. You know, this is human nature. We're all human beings. And I think we connect through our hearts, not through our heads. We connect through our vulnerabilities and who we are as people. And so what we learned is people want to share who they are. And it came down to a number of people said, you know, I'm kind of guided by kind of an inner compass. Some of them call it an inner moral compass. But that kind of thing inside me which says, this is right, that's wrong. And a couple of them used the phrase true north, so we decided to pick that up and say, what is your true north? Your true north is your most deeply held beliefs, the values you live your life by, and the principles you lead by. And if you can stay on course of that, you know, it's not about what somebody else believes. It's not about somebody else's values. It's not about adopting your values to somebody else. It's about what who you are and what you believe, what your values are. And if you can be true to that when you lead people, consistent with your values, you can't preach one set of values and do something else yourself. So that's your true north. And I think if we can stay on course of that, first of all, figure out what it is. That's the idea, discover your true north. And then stay on course, because we get pulled off by pressures or seductions, money, fame, and power. It's very easy to pull us off course and start chasing those external accomplishments rather than being true to who you are.
Absolutely. No, and to touch on that, in True North, you discuss targeted exercises that help leaders hone in on the purpose of the leadership to develop these skills. Or what are some of those exercises that they can do, that they can practice, actually?
Well, it starts by telling your life story. That really is the essence of who you are. Hmm. Where did you grow up? Who influenced you early in your life? What were the major experiences you had? What shaped you as the person you are today? What people and events and what inspired you to do what you're doing today? And then processing times that the most difficult times you had, what we call crucibles. We've got a whole chapter on crucibles. And these are the times that we really figure it out. You know, when everything's going your way, you kind of think you're better than you are. And when things aren't going your way, you get down to, hey, what's important to me in my life? Okay, hey, this didn't work out, or I felt uncomfortable in this environment. I want to do this, or I failed at this, but that didn't mean I failed as a person. I was just in the wrong place. So you process those crucibles, and a lot of people get held back by them. They feel they're victims. They feel like this is holding me back. But that really becomes the essence of who you are. You mentioned living in five countries. Wow, that's a real statement. That surely shaped you in many ways, and the experiences you had in dealing with different cultures, different nationalities, different values, helped shape who the person you are today. And that's the whole essence of understanding your true north.
Absolutely. I know it's funny that you say that, because you said experiences that you've had that shaped and, you know, shaped your life. I remember as a 7th, 8th grader reading one of Nelson Mandela's books, and that was one of my first. You know, Nelson Mandela, I always say, rest in peace, is, you know, first guy to really, really influence me. And Oprah as well, because I'm very into the media. And I was really, you were talking about authentic. I was really interested in how she got people to tell their stories to be the best versions of who they were. But it was reading Nelson Mandela's book, coming back from school. I was living in Burkina Faso at the time, so the time difference is different. And now Oprah Winfrey show played after we came back from school. And just seeing all these stories and how she got people to show, to work through differences or adversity. And then fast forward to, you know, to moving to the States, it was just Arianna Huffington, and she had a book, Thrive. She just had a conference, and I sort of followed what she did with Huffington Post, and I decided, you know, I could do something similar. So it's whenever I go back and I'm listening to what you say, there's several experiences across the several countries that I grew up in that just, you know, they just stuck with me and made me, like, realize this is something that I wanted to do. So that's very, very interesting. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm glad you brought up Mandela. My opinion, he's the most he was the most amazing leader in my lifetime. I did have the privilege of spending 15 minutes alone with him once, which was like a great gift.
Oh my goodness.
I feature him in chapter 9, The Journey from I to We, because if you study his history closely, as a young man, he was angry for good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what was going on with the Afrikaners in South Africa, anyone would be angry.
Right.
And he led the movement at the ANC, the African National Congress, the youth movement. And a lot of the people that had been transformed South Africa came out of that youth group, youth movement of the ANC.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then he went to jail for a crime he didn't commit. Can you imagine spending 27 years of your adult life, from 44 to 71, in prison, being brutalized? Everyone said, oh, he had it easy. He didn't have it easy. You know, he's working on the chain gang, man, and he was chopping rocks and stuff like that. He had it tough, and it was tough on his health and everything else. Yet he persevered, but he came out of there saying, you know, I just don't want to see go from white rule to black rule. I want to see South Africa be for all the people of South Africa. We're South Africans first, and we need to put that first. And he went back and forgave de Klerk and his the judge who committed him and his guards. I mean, this is an amazing man. I mean, wow, he's a great spiritual moral leader, in my opinion. We could all learn from him.
Oh, yeah. No, you're speaking my language, and that you just became my new favorite person, Bill. But because that's exactly what I say. He spent time in prison for longer than I've been alive. I always say this, and every time I feel like I'm getting into that trap where, you know, I feel like, something's wrong, nothing's always working, I just think about some of the things Mandela went through. You said I to we. He was very, you know, you had the right to be angry. There was that apartheid. And then you came out, you know, many people will be like, I'm going to get these guys back. No. But then he came out and he was such a symbol of unity and hope and it wasn't just even South Africa. I'm Nigerian, so, you know, I felt that as a West African. And so you thought, you know, they call him the father of Africa. But just because of the impact he had, and you're American and you felt his impact as well. And it was more of a, you know, a global ambassador. And when I was saying that resonated with me is, you know, I grew up as a diplomatic kid, always growing up with different cultures, having to fit in. And I was thinking, you know, if one day I would hope to influence as many people as he did, just because I think growing up in many countries, you get to see all these little things that could be done better, and you would hope to be a beacon in some way. So I am so with you. So Nelson Mandela,
Follow up on that. 1981, I went for the first time to South Africa. And I can tell you, I was extremely conflicted there. Saw this beautiful country. You go up to Table Mountain in Cape Town, and you see the Indian Ocean coming together, the Atlantic. It's one of the most beautiful places. People are beautiful. I heard Ladysmith Black Mambazo perform at a concert. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Right.
But they're tearing it apart. They're destroying the very place that, you know, the Creator gave them. And everyone thought for sure it was going to civil war. I can tell you, everyone thought we're going to have civil war before this is all over. Mandela stopped it. By the way, I also had an opportunity a number of years ago, about 7 or 8 years ago, to go to the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony in Oslo, Norway. Wantari Maathai won the Nobel Peace Prize. But I was seated at dinner the night before next to Oprah, who I'd never met before.
Oh, wow.
And I had 3 hours of dinner with her. And, you know, she's a celebrity. I'm nothing. But they're coming up, taking pictures. She's totally ignoring him. She didn't even talk to the person on the right. We spent 3 hours talking, and she's telling me how passionate she is about helping girls in Africa, her books for Africa. And she's telling me her whole story. She's so open about the sexual abuse and what she went through and how she found her authenticity through that and how she wants that for everyone else. And so that's why I featured her in the book, because she's an amazingly authentic person. And I think, frankly, as she tells her story, she became much more authentic as she got really in touch with the fact that she was a victim. I think for a while she thought, well, maybe I did something wrong. Then she realized, no, I was a victim. She was victimized. We got to save her. She's a little girl. She's 11, 12 years old. And, you know, and so amazing woman and what she's done. There's no media person that's done what she's done in our lifetime. Name anyone that's done what she has done. No one.
And it's so funny now. I'm going through the book and I haven't gotten to those parts yet, but those were two that stuck with me and shaped my life. And you just said it yourself. And, you know, I didn't even put, you know, authentic leadership or true north in my, you know, I didn't come up with that, but that's why I love, you know, when I was reading your history and listening to some of your talks and your segments, I was like, you know, you have a way of articulating this that it just makes sense, and it's making sense as I'm putting the pieces together right now on the interview with you. So I am definitely getting more excited. Examples? So let's start with historical, then go to present day. I know we mentioned the late Nelson Mandela, but who else would you think, historically first, is a great example of an authentic leader?
Well, if you want to go way back in history, Abraham Lincoln, he would be my number one role model. Okay?
Hey, Abe.
But it wasn't so easy. You know, he's got these dual objectives. He wants to save the nation, and he wants to free the slave, and it's just not so easy. It wasn't like a piece of cake. And he was losing the war, too. I mean, this guy hung in there, and he had incredible judgment about things. But he was a great, authentic human being. I used to read about him in books when I was like 8, 9 years old, you know? And I learned lessons from him, you know, from his books about him when I was 9 years old. I still remember him. So I would certainly put him in that category. I'm sorry that President Kennedy got shot. He could have maybe been that... Martin Luther King is certainly one of the great leaders of our lifetime.
Right.
Another incredible tragedy that, what is it, why do the good die young? But, you know, this is just terrible.
Yeah.
But a great spiritual, moral leader that spoke to people regardless of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
And willing to take on things that are fundamentally wrong. And so I, you know, those two people historically, in addition to Lincoln, really stand out for me.
No, I love it. Yeah, content of our character, right?
And he inspired, I can tell you. It wasn't just African Americans he inspired. He inspired the whole nation, the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't wrong about what he did either. So they got after him about criticizing Vietnam, but he wasn't wrong about that.
Yeah, no, not at all. And what about present day examples?
Well, we have some great leaders today. I think that, you know, we have examples of really bad leaders, like this guy, Donald Trump. And unfortunately, they're the ones that get all the media attention, you know? I mean, he was a bad leader when he was in business, you know? Well, he is. Okay, he's corrupt. But, you know, but today, there are some really great leaders. And I am just pleased to have the privilege to talk to some of these people. Some of them are well-known, like Paul Pullman of Unilever or Jack Ma of China. There's a guy that's not as well-known. Amazing guy. He's got to know him. We serve on the Exxon board together. A man named Ken Frazier. Ken is the CEO of Merck. Now you say, hey, this guy's got it made, leading the world's leading pharmaceutical company. Can I tell you, Ken Frazier's grandfather is a slave. Okay?
Wow.
So if you do the math, it's a pretty amazing story, and he is still carrying on, as he says, the narrative started by his grandfather of being your own person and doing the right thing and making a difference in the world. He's changed what he's doing. He's doing it in terms of trying to cure disease, but he is an amazing human being, and I've had the privilege of getting to know him. I just think he's fantastic. Another one who's doing a fantastic job is Indra Nooyi, the CEO of PepsiCo. Indra was born in India, came here, and just done an amazing job in leading PepsiCo under huge criticism, a takeover attempt from Nelson Peltz, yet she stayed the course and is converting her company from, you know, high-fat foods and sugar-based drinks to healthy foods and beverages, and a visionary leader. So those are a couple. I could keep going, give you many, many more.
No, those are good examples. I think for me, like you said, the many types of leaders, for me, the type of leaders that I resonate with are the visionary ones. The ones that are even sometimes there to think outside the box. I don't know if you agree with this, but sometimes you could throw like Serge and Branson in there or Elon Musk. Some of these people that, you know, they come out out the box with some weird idea. And like, you know, initially you're like, how did that even work? And then when it actually works, you're like, why didn't I think of that? But the way they pieced that together.
No, these people, like, I had a breakfast I hosted for Jack Ma in Davos, the World Economic Forum, in January. And one of the people who came, Richard Branson. There are only 12 people there, 14 people there. So it's a pretty small group. He is amazing, you know. And I think it's remarkable. I'll tell you another remarkable leader is a guy came to my class. He's now a young global leader of the World Economic Forum, a guy named John Hope Bryan. John, and we're talking about crucibles. He said, you know, I'm a former homeless man. And I was homeless for 6 months. It was my own fault. I had to live in my truck for 6 months. And this guy has raised $500 million to try to bring financial literacy into the inner city and to help the poor. Wow. And he's an amazing guy. Heads up an organization called Operation Hope. And he wrote a book, How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. He just got an amazing perspective, a great human being. And he was very closely associated with Dr. King's associates, Andrew Young and others. But
I've got to check it out.
Maybe never heard of this guy. I tell you, he deserves to be heard of. He's just an amazing leader and come from nothing. The guy had nothing, you know? And look what he's done, because he has a passion to do it. Literally, he's the kind of leaders I admire.
No, I'm definitely going to check him out because I love stories like that. And you mentioned Jack Ma. I love Jack Ma. Jack Ma is another one. Speaking of Jack Ma, who comes from, China and, you know, Alibaba and all that, how would you say... I know you have a chapter dedicated to global leadership. What is your opinion of global leadership, and how can that happen? That's a particular focus of a lot of people on the podcast, because a lot of them are identify with several cultures, and sometimes I went through this where I was trying to find my place. I was like, where am I? Like, I was put in this like four continents, and I was like trying to discover myself until I became comfortable where I was. So, what's your opinion on that, and how can one develop those skills?
Well, you're a living example, Teo, because, you know, today you can't just be American or German or Japanese and take everything you learn in one country and try to impose it on people in another country. I think to really understand, we live in a global world. All business is global today. Whether you think it is or not, all business is global. So to understand the world, you've got to understand the people you're serving. You've got to get out among them. So I think young people that have a privilege of going and living overseas is really important. I didn't have that opportunity. I didn't go overseas until I was 26. But at Harvard Business School now, every single MBA student goes and works in a developing country. Might be Turkey. It might be Vietnam. Might be Ghana. These are the countries they go to. They don't just go to glamorous places like Shanghai or somewhere like that. They're getting on the ground in real companies, in real countries. I didn't mean real countries. They're all real countries.
I know what you mean. Yeah. The
people, they're not staying in some 5-star hotel.
Right.
That's my point.
Right.
And they're learning. And I think I recommend that to all young people, because that's like you had to play yourself off against these other cultures. You go live in Sweden. Well, there's not a lot of similarities between Nigeria and Sweden.
Not
so you
got
to decide, who am I? You know? And so you rub up against differences. And then it starts to shape who you are, and you decide what's important to you. And then you learn, we can learn from every, I've never been to a country where I didn't learn an enormous amount about the people. But you only get it, my first time I went to China in 1984, get out and live for 10 days out in the countryside. And we're working on a deal with a chemical company there. But I can tell you, I was going down to the markets and talking to the people to the extent they could talk English. Going and watching school children, just watching how people live, seeing the new elite come up, the farmers going to market. And you start to learn a lot about a country like that, much more than you will in sitting in your home here or in a 5-star hotel overseas.
True, and I think one of the tools that helps us is, you said we live in the global world, and I completely agree. We also live in millennials are the most diverse generation. We also live in a very digital world. And what digital does is that it makes the world flatter than it has ever been. And depending on how you can use it for good or bad. You know, there are many people like, you know, you were talking about Trump earlier using his powers for bad. There are many people that can use it for good or bad. But if you use your digital skills, I'm talking to you on Skype here. And I could talk to anyone, and we have, we could record an interview that's heard in 105 countries. So it's I think, it's becoming even more global, and we have to be able to tap into that, especially my generation as millennials, and try and figure out the right vehicles to push out the messages, the stories, the and the impact that we want to make. So
yeah, these are great vehicles. I mean, we, until recently, our son and daughter-in-law lived with our granddaughters in Germany, and we can connect up with them with Skype or FaceTime, and it's a great way to be in touch. So we have those tools, and it does flatten us so we can be much more in touch and we can understand where people are coming from. And frankly, I think you have to learn to not just accept people's differences, but to actually celebrate them. You know, we've had a lot of, in my lifetime, a tremendous amount of discrimination on the basis of race, religion, gender, national origin. We're still going through that.
Yeah.
But I tell you, among the millennials, they don't care. They don't care, frankly, what your sexual preference is, what your race is, what your gender. They care about who you are as a person. So I think that fits very much in my ideas of being an authentic leader. If we can get to people, hey, you just accept people. This is who I am, man. And yeah, if I can't accept you for who you are, how can we have a relationship? Well, there are differences, but hey, I love that difference. You know, yeah. I celebrate that. I can learn. You know,
exactly.
I told you, a friend who's a grandfather slave. I can't imagine what it'd be like. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And have a father who never went beyond being a janitor, and yet you're the guy who went to. Eventually got scholarship. He went to Harvard Law School. I mean, you know, how did he get to Harvard Law School? He's a smart guy, but he had to have scholarships too. But he's transforming the world, you know? Good for him.
No, I agree.
If he denied his past, you see, some people do that. They kind of deny their past. They say, oh, no, I didn't come. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, you did. That's who you are. That's as much a part of you as who you are today, you know? And I think that's so important that we feel we can honor that past by processing and say, okay, maybe I didn't have all the breaks that you did, but, you know, I learned a lot from these experiences. Yeah.
No, I think celebrating diversity is so key. What we always say here is, we need leaders to be able to understand how to communicate across cultures and think outside the box. Because I think it's very, very dangerous if you don't understand what it's like to celebrate what's unique about people and also learn how to communicate through those things. And what I always say is that even though we've advanced technically, sometimes there are some quote-unquote Berlin walls that exist today.
Yeah.
And I call them, some of them, the main ones, stereotypes, where, you know, to me, stereotypes are, I always say, the laziest ways to understand culture because they make assumptions about who you are and what you are without actually knowing who you are and what you are. And what happens is that you go in there with a barrier there without actually getting to see what's different about them, understand that, and see how that can actually open your mind and give you fresh perspectives. So I think it's very key. I mean, we can make all the advances we want technologically, but if we don't tap into those, you know, we can make the same mistakes. I mean, you can see sometimes you turn on the news and you're like, we're still doing this in 2015. And
We are doing it, but we gotta reject it.
Yeah.
One of the guys in the book, a very interesting guy named David Tai. Okay, David was born in Vietnam, but he lived in 12 different places the first 2 years of his life. He was a boat person, okay, going from island to island with his parents. You understand, this is post-Vietnam War. You know, he's a guy in his 30s, and they had to escape, to be honest. And so he wound up in Seattle. And when he was 18, he said to, I guess, no, he got it from college. He was 22. And he said to his mother, I've got to go back and discover my roots in Vietnam. I'd never been there. His mother said, don't go. You'll never come back. Well, she was right. He never came back. He's now the leading entrepreneur in Thailand. He started a chain of coffee houses. He got another chain of noodle houses. He's taken them all over Asia. Extremely successful person. He met his wife there. But it's a very inspiring story. He's a real global leader. But he's also committed to the people of Thailand, even though, you know, he hadn't been there for the first 22 years of his life after he was born. But he's very committed, Vietnam. He's totally committed to the people of Vietnam to make that country great. And this is exactly what Vietnam needs, entrepreneurs, inspired people, you know. So I love to see stories like this.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And then thank you so much, Bill, for coming on time. But before we go, I want you to give the opportunity to answer two questions. The first one is, where can we find out more about your books? How can we support it? and how can we make sure it's, you know, it's seen and read by millions everywhere?
Thank you very much for the question. I have a new website. It's the title of the book, discoveryyourtruenorth.org. Okay? So you can go on there and get it. Or you can just push a button, go to Amazon. It tells you a lot about the book right on Amazon.com. Just put it in Discover Your True North. Okay. So I appreciate your asking. And it'll be in all the Barnes & Noble stores. We have a big display starting, I think, this week or next. And so I'd love people to read it. Doesn't do any good to spend a year writing a book to you unless people read it. So my whole goal is for people to read the book. And because I think I'd love to get your feedback on it, too.
Oh, I'm sure they really. I'm already there. So, and I really, really love that you said all these things, because this is what I'm really passionate about, and it's great when someone like you, who's had experiences, can come articulate this and actually help me discover my own true north. So, I'm very appreciative of that. But like I said earlier, mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. How do you, sir, use your difference to make a difference?
Well, what is my difference? My difference is I think I've tried to had some real ups and downs as a leader, some rough times, but I think I've learned a lot about leadership. And all I'm trying to do is to say what I was hearing about leadership 10 years ago made no sense to me. I'm trying to say there's another way to lead. You can be who you are. You don't have to be someone else. You can be who you are. And if I can inspire people, particularly people under 40, to use their capabilities, their strengths, their God-given abilities to make a difference in this world, we'll have a lot better world. It's not about just getting rich or aggrandizing yourself. It's really about how you can make a difference and give back and become that we kind of leader. So that's what I'm trying to do right now, and I'm totally passionate about doing
it. Oh, well, I love it. I mean, you said it so well. And then thank you for being an amazing inspiration and using your difference to make a difference. Really can't wait for this podcast to get out. I'm going to put it out this week so we can promote it and promote your book. And, you know, I hope we can definitely run to each other in the future and talk more about these topics.
Thank you so much, and I hope to meet you in person.
Me too.
Okay.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.